Hey everybody, Matt McCarthy for Rugby Wrap-Up back at the Fantasy Sports Network, Studio 34, 35th Street in the Renaissance Hotel, New York City, and we have a dandy for you today. We have the legendary, the mythical, George Hook calling in from Ireland. Coach, welcome back.
Yeah, welcome back. It's very good of you to give space to an ancient, fat, balding old broadcaster like myself. But the interesting thing is, once upon a time in Europe, you couldn't play rugby in August or July or June. Unless it was an hour in the month, you couldn't play. Now look what's just happened in the last fortnight. Women's Rugby World Cup. Immediately this weekend, we move into the Pro 14 with two South African teams. And then, while that's all going on, in the Southern Hemisphere, we've had an extraordinary two games between New Zealand and Australia, and the first green shoots of recovery from South Africa. So even now, this old man is very excited.
Well, I'm excited too, but let's keep it on the... Let's start with the Women's World Cup in your neck of the woods over in Ireland. Give us the skinny on that, Coach, because it was spectacular.
Well, the first thing is, it by the standards of women's rugby, and you must put that at right at the beginning, it was a sellout. Now, that means that, like, a stadium with 5,000 seats in it is sold out. It's not the Redskins against the Atlanta Braves or anything. It's not 50,000, 60,000. But all the seats were full, point one. Point two is that we're seeing a gulf in women's rugby. There are now four teams, England, New Zealand, USA, and France, and to be honest, the rest are nowhere. It was an awful tournament for Ireland. We finished in eighth place, which means we don't qualify for the automatically qualify for the next World Cup. We were terrible. Our newspapers and our media are full of criticism for the Irish team. The US women, I must say, did their country proud. And sad to relate, and it pains me to say it, Kiwi women are just as good as Kiwi men at playing.
Yeah, they just took over in the second half. That was just amazing against England. And England, a great team.
We have 12 teams in the tournament, and 11 of them are amateurs playing for fun. You've got one professional setup, which is England. So all their women are on professional contracts. So you've got to say they start the tournament with an advantage. They looked the part until they got to the final. When I must say, the quality of New Zealand's rugby was extraordinary.
Yeah.
There also is a gulf in women's rugby now between the top teams who are really athletic. I mean, the USA scored a try at the death in their pool game against England, which won them a quarterfinal place, from 75 metres. I mean, it was just unbelievably good. The big change, however, is that all these English professional women were playing as professionals for the last time.
Yeah.
Because England are now putting all the money into sevens and taking away from 15s.
How do you think that affects things going forward? Is this the death of 15s for women?
Oh, yeah. It's the end of the game for women. For a number of reasons, I have to say. I don't think 15-a-side rugby was ever designed for women. I don't think God, when he made Eve, he thought, I'll make Eve into a loose head frog. He thought, I'll make Eve into a scrum half. And Adam, of course, you know, because the quality of our passing in the Garden of Eden bought it all. But the thing is that sevens is a better game to watch. It's good for television, and it's an Olympic sport. Ergo, money. Now, if you look at the players in all these teams, 11 bar England, they're all paying for free, except the players who are in playing in the sevens tournament around the world who are paid because of the money of the Olympic Games.
Not a lot of money, though, Coach. Not a lot of money. Especially.
I realize I'm talking to the greatest economy in the world.
Yeah.
But us over here in the Eurozone, if we get some money, we've got an old thing which my father told me, a bird in the hand is worth two in the bush. So I'll happily accept $10 in my hand rather than $20 in the bush. And that's the decision female rugby players are going to make.
But let me ask you this, because you're saying that despite this tournament, and I got to tell you, I was hard-pressed to remember the last time I was anticipating the second half of a U.S. national team in a World Cup. And watching the USA versus New Zealand, it was like watching the men and Scotland in the last World Cup in 2015 when they went into the locker room with a lead. They had the puncher's chance, and it was riveting. I'm yelling at the screen.
Yeah, I mean, this has been a wonderful tournament. I mean, at its best, the final was, I mean, I was watching the final, and never once did it enter my head that I was watching women's rugby. Watching that final between New Zealand and England, I was watching the game I love, rugby union football. And there was also really interesting then. The English women were professionals. They were bigger, probably fitter. But again, it was a triumph of technique over fitness. New Zealand technically were superb. Their ability to offload, their ability to understand where to keep the ball, their understanding where the support players was right up there with the best traditions of the men and women in black.
All right, Coach, we have to take a break, but when we come back, we're going to talk Pro 14, but I also want you to think about during the break the proposal from Welshman Johnny Lewis, who we have to quote because he edits this stuff for us. He wants to combine the men's and the women's World Cup so that they're one event. So I want you to think about that, and we will be right back with Mr. George Hook after this.
The world's top professional rugby competition is bringing excitement to Philadelphia this September with English Premiership Rugby's American Series. Come experience current European champion Saracens taking on Newcastle Falcons at Talent Energy Stadium on September 16. Tickets are on sale now for the inaugural match of English Premiership Rugby's American Series at www.spectratix.com.
All right, everybody, how's it going? We sip, we peel, and we slide? Nah, like this.
We sip, we peel, we win.
I think I'm getting this.
Grab a large or extra large freshly ground, freshly brewed hot coffee for your chance to win great prizes, like free coffee for a year. Get your celebration ready. Dunkin' Donuts. This is coffee. This is winning.
If you're just joining us, this is a big match and a big moment as Clijsters toes the line.
You know, John, Anderson has really been struggling out there today. Mistake as Clijsters clinches another title. Don't let your nutrition get in the way. USANA, the official multivitamin of the WTA.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Rugby Wrap-Up. Matt McCarthy at the Fantasy Sports Network, Studio 34 on West 35th Street in the Renaissance Hotel in New York City. And we have Mr. George Hook back with us. He is calling from across the pond in Dublin. Coach, we left off on that cliffhanger there where we have Johnny Lewis's question, the Welshman, about combining the men's and women's World Cup to make it one huge event so you have rugby every day.
Well, the first thing is you might let me know what plant he's been eating, sniffing or drinking, because certainly, he's not on this planet when he made this suggestion. Television is not going to mix a game that's going to deliver 3,000 seats against the game is going to deliver 60,000 seats. It's not going to deliver an event that will count its television audience in thousands against a television event that will count its audience in millions. It's just not going to happen. Women 15s is on the way out. We are facing a huge crisis in the game of sevens versus men's 15s. And make no mistake, television calls the shots. When NBC rang Notre Dame and for about football, and they said, we want the game at 3 o'clock, Notre Dame said, would that be AM or PM? So television calls the shots.
Yeah, well, there's no doubt about that. And I hope you're wrong about the 15s game, because for the women, because this final for me was eye-opening. Anyway, let's get to the Pro 14, because I know you have a lot to say about that. I turn it over to you, sir.
Well, the first thing is we have two South African teams. But a lot of teams in this tournament, particularly the Italians, but also now the South Africans, don't have a lot of money. So what they're doing to try and make it work is the Cheetahs arrived in Dublin. So it's one airfare, but two games. Nevertheless, it is costing for that trip in the region of $250,000. So every team that travels to South Africa or comes from South Africa to Europe, you're talking $250,000 per two game segment.
Wow.
I don't think it's going to generate that amount of money. Remember, you have two teams in this, one South African team and one Italian team, who are already effectively in Chapter 11 and have been bailed out by the parent union. So this Pro 12, you know, it's not the great gold rush in Alaska. They're not going to make a ton of money out of this, and it's all up for grabs what's going to happen. The other thing we have no idea is how will teams react. I know air travel's much different now. Jet lag and all this kind of stuff is less of a problem because South Africa is only an hour in difference. But nevertheless, it's going to be very difficult for teams to shuttle backwards and forwards across the equator.
Do they fly coach or first class or business class?
Well, that's really interesting. That's a great question. The organizers have said the players must travel business class. But the problem is you've got a group of 40 players.
Yeah.
And backup staff. Now, how do you, first of all, there aren't any planes other than this great A380 or whatever they call it that have 40 seats in business class on the plane.
Right.
So therefore, you may be talking about two plane flights, and then you're assuming that no other person wants to travel to South Africa or backwards. That particular time.
Yeah.
So this is going to be very tricky. I'm watching this with great interest.
All right, speaking of watching this, who are the players that we should keep an eye on?
Well, I mean, I'm Irish, you know, so therefore, naturally, I'm going to be watching how the Irish teams are going to perform. But there's a really interesting thing going on, which will be of interest to anybody watching Leinster play. Because effectively, the Ireland midfield of Johnny Sexton, Ringrose and Henshaw at 10, 12 and 13 were on the men's tour. All came back hurt. So the real question is, are they going to be on the field before Christmas? Now, if they're on the field before Christmas, it will be a testament to the pharmacist's art. And I have... You know, and we are now pushing these men beyond possibility. The other team you got to watch, I think, if you're in the US and you're neutral, is Glasgow, who over the last number of years have played some smashing rugby and have a really inventive way of playing the game. 13 to watch in Wales are the Scarlets, who had a smashing season last year, have got better season by season. So for me, the three teams to watch are going to be Leinster, Scarlets in Wales, and Glasgow in Scotland.
And how about a coach on the hot seat? Anybody come to your mind?
Oh, there's a great story here. Razzy Rasmussen, he got looked over for the South African job, so essentially not a fit of Pete, but he was pretty teed off. He came across to Munster, signed up with Munster, and then after a year, just as soon as the South African Rugby Union waved a bucket full of rand in front of him, he said to Munster, bye-bye, guys, and go back to Africa. So Munster are now effectively coachless, and it's going to be really interesting. Can the number two, number three, and number four guys at Munster step up to the plate? So that's Rasmussen still sort of seeing out his the end of his sort of notice. So I mean, I don't. If I was him, I wouldn't be walking down O'Connell Street in Limerick on a dark night. In Munster, it's a huge story on the coaching front. And then the other really interesting one is Italy. Mickey Bradley, former Ireland scrum half, former Munster coach, has taken over at Zebre. Now, Zebre are busted flush financially. They're bailed out by the union. They've been bottom of every league table since their inception. Can Bradley do something? It's not so much he's on the hot seat, but you remember, Bradley had to go to Georgia, you know, the birthplace of Joseph Stalin, got a coaching job. Now, he did a good job at Georgia and he's come back to Zebre. So this is his way, perhaps, of rehabilitation into the first division of coaching. So eyes on Munster, eyes on Zebre, if you're interested in finding out what's happening to the coach.
Perfect, coach. And we are getting the word from downstairs, the, you know how those producers are, that we're out of time. But before we go, I just wanted to point out a few details here. This is a light green shirt because of Ireland, and I am wearing a tie because you did point out that you were not wearing a tie, and you figured you were coming on with Americans that wouldn't be wearing a tie. And this tie is from British Army player Ignatius Putty, who took the tie off his neck and gave it to me at the Rugby Town Sevens. He is also called the Flying Brick Coach, and he's a great kid and a great guy. And this tie is because of you.
Yeah, you understand the putty is something we use to keep our windows closed.
Yes, yes. I think it's kind of a contrived name, but it works. Anyway, you are certainly not contrived. You are the real deal, and we love having you, and we can't wait to have you back. Mr. George Hook, ladies and gentlemen, thank you, Coach. Much appreciated.
Thank you.
Matt McCarthy for Rugby Wrap-Up at the Studio 34 Fantasy Sports Network in the Renaissance Hotel on West 35th Street in New York City, signing off.